Merry Christmas. Today's word comes from Matthew chapter 2, verses 13 to 23. Now when they had departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, Rise, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him. And he rose and took the child and his mother by night and departed to Egypt and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by prophet. Out of Egypt I called my son. Then Herod, when he saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, became furious. And he sent and killed all the male children in Bethlehem in all that region, who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that he had ascertained from the wise men. Then was fulfilled what was spoken by the prophet Jeremiah. A voice was heard in Ramah, weeping and loud lamentation, Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be comforted because they are no more. But when Herod died, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, Rise, take the child and his mother, and go to the land of Israel, for those who sought the child's life are dead. And he rose and took the child and his mother and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning over Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there, and being warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee, and he went and lived in the city called Nazareth, so that what was spoken by the prophets might be fulfilled, that he would be called a Nazarene. This is the word of God.
Merry Christmas. At the beginning of service, I was thinking, wow, what percentage of our church has their family somewhere else? And apparently it's a lot. But it's great to have some of you who come back home. And this is the kind of world we live in today, where wherever you go, you may feel like you don't quite belong. And we have a word for that. That word is displacement, to be displaced. Did you know Christmas is all about displacement? It's interesting, isn't it? That's not what the culture says, but it's absolutely in the Bible. And I would like to bring some attention to that and help your heart to rest there, especially if you're the kind of person who regularly feels you don't belong. Today is a word for you. Part one, displaced by the powerful and the majority. That's part one. Part two, loved and protected in an unloving and unjust world. There's a lot of people today, especially young people, who are very upset that nobody seems to see them, know them, love them, and they're regularly kind of hung out to dry. And one of the things I want to say is, that's normal, okay? It's the kind of world we live in. It's normal, and nobody sees you, cares about you, especially if you're not of the skin color or the ethnicity of the majority, okay? But you're still loved. Part three, Emmanuel for you. Christmas is all about Emmanuel. Part one is displaced by the powerful and the majority. Let's start by telling you a couple stories. When I was a kid, when I was 5 years old, my parents, we packed up everything that we had, and we came to the United States. I was born in Korea, came to the United States. We moved into a town that some of you may know about. It's called Richmond, California. It's here in the Bay Area. And it is basically a poor working class black community. At least it was back then. I'm not exactly sure what the makeup looks like today. That's very much what it looked like back then. And I had never gone to school. And so my parents stuck me in school. They're like, what? School had started. And we were already a couple weeks late. The principal was not happy. But after, you know, my uncle in his broken English explained that my parents were not lazy. They just had come from Korea. He said, okay. Yeah. Of course your kid can join school. So they stuck me into kindergarten. And apparently for the first 3 days, I cried and cried and cried. I cried so much that they called home. And my aunt, who's only 7 years older than me, she had to show up to calm me down. So here I was in this class, and everybody was black. I think there was one Chinese kid, there might have been one white kid, and there was me. Mostly, I wasn't afraid of the kids. I just didn't have anybody who knew me, and I couldn't speak a lick of English. And so I didn't belong. Can you relate? Can you relate? Most of you are in this room. If you weren't born in the U.S., probably your parents weren't born in the U.S. It's a strange time we live in. You can be American. You can be born in America. You can even be white, okay? And you feel, regularly where you go, displaced. But this was the version that I thought I'd share with. And it goes, on my dad's 80th birthday, he said something which I had never heard, okay? My dad is 84 years old, so I only heard this 4 years old. I was a grown man, a middle-aged man, and then I found this out. On his 80th birthday, he just started getting all, like, you know, reminiscent and started talking about when he was young. And he talked about, in the middle of the night, his grandfather woke everybody up, and says, "We're leaving. Get whatever you can take. We're leaving." They lived in an area which is today part of North Korea. And the communists were clearly starting to run the country. And his grandfather was wealthy, and they had a good chunk of land. And in the middle of the night, his whole family had to pack up and walk over the hills to escape, to go to freedom, or at least whatever they thought was freedom. It wasn't a rich country back then, but his grandfather was rich, I guess, which is my great-grandfather, whom I've never met, don't know him. I've actually never even met, I don't even really have a relationship with my dad's dad, okay? And so they lost everything. They lost everything, and they had to start all over. In the South, which is, the culture's a little different, the accent's different. So you are among people that have the same blood as you, that look like you. They sound a little different than you, because you're displaced, and you don't have anything. So fast forward, my dad was an elementary school teacher, which is in Korea. You can actually make decent money, especially if you teach in a private school, which he did. And was that right? Yeah, he did. I think he started in public school and then he taught in private school. And he had actually amassed enough money to buy himself a nice little apartment in Seoul. Today, that apartment is not in a fancy neighborhood. It's really expensive because it's Seoul. But back then, that means he's a young man on his way, right? So he's making a kind of comfortable living, and enough so that I think even that my mom, they could like hire somebody to come clean the apartment. I like that. Middle class, yet there's enough people who are so poor that you can hire them to do that. That's what it was like in the late 70s. On my mom's side of the family, two of my uncles served in the U.S. military, not the Korean military, the U.S. military. And as such, they had the opportunity to go to the U.S. and become American citizens. And they took that. And back then, you could invite your family. So they did. So my mom was the oldest of eight. So she had seven younger siblings. Everybody went to America except for her and my dad. And they sat on that decision. Because it wasn't an easy decision. Are you going to give up everything that you have, even though you have a promising start to your married life with your two young boys, and you're going to give up everything? And they did. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't be standing here today. And so the story I started with was a displaced boy who's 5 years old, who's been in America for about 1 week. But that story actually starts when my dad was a boy. I asked my dad on his 8th birthday. I said, why did you decide to make that decision to come to the U.S.? He said, Korea was getting wealthier, and it was a comfortable place to live. But you never know when these evil communists will invade, and everything will be ruined. That was his thinking. It's very interesting to hear an 80-year-old man say that. Today, I bet you most of South Korea does not think that can happen. Oh, they're wrong. It's an extremely rich country today, and there are a lot of very successful people there today. It could all be gone tomorrow. That's the reality. That's what it looks like. And I'm sharing that with you. Not because, so you could feel bad for me. You shouldn't feel bad for me. We got to come to the freest country in America, in the world, one of the safest places in the world, and I got to grow up here. But that little story I just told you, that's history. That's the world. It happens all the time. And you know what? It's Christmas too. There's the Son of God who is God Himself. When He came to be human, He was a vulnerable child. And His family was running for their life. And the very beginning of the Messiah's life is colored utterly by displacement, by persecution. Did you know that Jesus was a refugee? That's what refugees are. Something horrible happens over there. These people run for their lives to go somewhere else. And then they show up here, and at this place, they don't even want you. They don't even want you. Well, America, we're strange. We actually will say, okay, well, we'll take you, and we'll actually help you. But that's very weird. Most countries don't do that. Right. Jesus was a refugee. I'll tell you something a little personal. Our family, some of you know that we've been certified to become foster parents, and we chose refugee foster parenting. So any day now, we can get a call from our agency that says, hey, this guy can be your foster son. And he'll be a refugee from probably, we requested Latin America. And I'm speaking extremely bad Spanish right now on Duolingo, okay? So that's in preparation for that, okay? And so I didn't choose this passage so I can tell you that, but I'm telling that to you because all, you know, for weeks I've been meditating on these Christmas passages, especially this Matthew 2 passage, do you notice how much pain there is in these, in Matthew chapter 2? How much injustice and evil. And I'm thinking about what will our foster son have experienced so that he gets to come to America. He's like, America, isn't that the Christian country? Yeah, you get to come to godless America. Isn't that the place where most everybody's white? Yeah, yeah, your foster parents are going to be Korean. Welcome to church. People from all over, who knows where, will be at church. Just like your Savior Jesus. Let me show it to you in the Bible. Verse 13. When they had departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt. It's funny how many times I've heard this all my life. I never thought about this refugee thing. And suddenly I'm going to become a refugee foster father. And it's like, wow, it's like refugee. And remain there till I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him. Wicked evil. Injustice. Verse 14. And he rose and took the child. This is Joseph. And his mother by night. Just like my dad. He probably didn't want to wake up in the middle of the night. And his grandfather kicking him out of bed and said, you'll be absolutely quiet. Because our lives depend on it. And departed to Egypt and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what the Lord had spoken. I'll say a little bit more about that a little later. Verse 19. When Herod died, so fast forward, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, rise, take the child and his mother, and go to the land of Israel, for those who sought the child's life are dead. Verse 21, and he rose and took the child and his mother and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning over Judea in the place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there, and being warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee. So let me say a couple things here. Do you get to decide where you live and grow up? I'm pretty sure my dad, I think he thought he was going to grow up on his grandfather's land. Instead, he grew up around people who had no idea who they were. And he grew up poor. It was hard. I'm sure he didn't think his own sons were going to grow up in a very far away country. And his first son's first day of school was going to be filled with weeping. You don't always get to choose, especially if you are oppressed, if you're poor, if you're weak. You're really, really blessed to live in America, especially if you're middle class or above. In some ways, Christmas, we read these passages and we don't think anything about these things. But many of you know something of this. If not, you are the one who had to wake up in the middle of the night. Maybe your parents, you know something of this displacement. I want you to know, this is Christmas. Let me just tell you a little something about this passage. Let's go back to verse 19. Take the child and go to the land of Israel, for those who sought the child's life are dead. How old was Jesus when he got to go back to his home country? We actually don't know. We don't know. And go down to verse 21 here. Went to the land of Israel, verse 22. Archelaus was reigning over Judea in the place of his father Herod. Let me just give you a little bit of history here. What the historians have dug up. The person who did this horrible, evil thing, was a guy named Herod the Great. And he reigned for a long time. 37 to 4 BC. So a lot of you people think, like, when was Jesus born? 0 AD. Not quite. Scholars think that Jesus was probably born maybe 5, 6, maybe 7 BC. So this AD, BC, it's a little off by a certain number of years, okay? And so let's just say Jesus was born in 5 BC. Then Herod dies in 4, and then they can go back, right? But that's not exactly the way the Bible puts it. Those who sought the child's life are dead. So Herod had a couple sons. So sometimes there's confusion when people read the Bible. There's the guy that he had the son named Archelaus, and he reigned in an area called Judea and Samaria. Judea is where Jerusalem is. Samaria is just north of that, and Galilee is above that. And he also reigned in Idumea. I won't get into the geography of that. And then later on, there's a guy named Herod Antipas. Archelaus dies after a certain period. And then during Jesus' ministry, it's Herod Antipas. He's not a picnic either. He's quite horrible and murderous, just like his dad, okay? And when they were going to go back, well, Joseph found out that Archelaus was reigning. Like father, like son. It's hard to know exactly when Joseph decided it's time to go back. Was Jesus 1 or 2 or 3 or 5? I guess what I want to tell you is Jesus might have started school in an Egyptian school. He might have had to play with Egyptian kids in the neighborhood. And just like I experienced, which many of you have experienced, he probably got called a lot of racist things and mocked that he could not speak the language properly. It's Christmas. If you look at that passage, verse 22, he goes back, got to avoid the town where they're from. He's of the line of David, which means you go back to Bethlehem, but you can't go back to there because that's where Archelaus reigns. So that's how he ends up in Nazareth, and where Jesus gets this crude accent. At least that's it thought was crude back then. I always think today, the way I tend to think of it is like how people in the educated parts of America look down on those who speak with a southern accent. In Judea, they looked down on those who spoke with a Galilean accent. Jesus didn't grow up in Judea. He grew up in Nazareth. Because of this. It's all about displacement. It's not just here in the Bible. It was utterly God's plan. Let me show you another place in the Bible. One of our young adults, who was actually my son, he read it today in our Advent reading, John chapter 1. The true light which gives light to everyone was coming into the world. That's Jesus. Verse 10. He was in the world and the world was made through him because he's God, his creator. But here is what the creator has to deal with. Yet the world did not know him. Verse 11, he came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. And when most people read that, that's like the Jews rejected him as Savior, even rejected him as Messiah, even though he is the true son of David, the promised king. That's true. But I think it's even more than that. When he was a little kid, he should be growing up in Judea. Instead, he's probably being pushed around by the kids in Galilee as a little boy. Even when he's young, He's not seen. He's not known. He's probably not loved, and he's very much probably rejected, even as a boy. So, this is what God chose to do for Christmas. If you feel that in your life you are a person that regularly shows up, nobody sees me here. You go to your company, the majority are this skin color, and you're this skin color. You have a certain accent. And you wonder if people think, you know, like, are they going to promote me? Well, I have the right connections so I can land a job. That's a normal thing to worry about here. The Son of God knows. Not because he's up there and I'm omniscient and I know all things, because I have felt it. I have felt it just like you. I know what it's like to be rejected and outside. Let's go to part two. Loved and protected in an unloving and unjust world. Let's go to this passage, which I said to wait for you. Let's just take you to verse 15. He remained in Egypt until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by the prophet. Out of Egypt I called my son. Most of you hear that and you're like, that's a nice historical, interesting. It's not just historical, it's deeply theological. That little passage there, it is prophetic. It is prophesied because that was God's plan. But it's really, really important, actually. It has everything to do with this issue of displacement. Now, did you know that Egypt isn't just a country? All right? In the Bible, Egypt represents something. So, when God formed his people, the most powerful, the richest, the most advanced nation of the whole world is Egypt. Jacob and his descendants, you know, Jacob's name is renamed Israel, and then he has all these children, and then their descendants become Israel. Right? They end up in this place, Egypt. Why? Because they're displaced. Because there's famine. Because people are starving to death. And they end up in Egypt. And God makes a way for them in Egypt. And then over time, at the beginning, it starts off good. But then later on, Egypt starts to oppress them and treats them like nothing. And that's how the world is. It's again and again. Abraham had to flee to Egypt, and God had to protect him in Egypt. He's afraid. He's a minority. And there, I guess if you have a beautiful woman, and his wife apparently was quite lovely, she could end up in the harem of the leader. We read this stuff, and you're like, oh, that's interesting. It's not interesting. It's how the world works. If your sister or your daughter or your cousin or your mother is very pretty and you are in somebody else's country, you might not have a mother or a sister soon. But Abraham was there and God had to protect him. And he takes him out of Egypt to take him to the land that was promised to him. So this story happens again and again and again. Abraham, Jacob, Joseph, the son of Jacob, this Joseph, and of course you know it's Moses. Egypt doesn't just represent a powerful country, it represents everywhere in the world where they're the most advanced, they're the richest and most powerful. And if you live it, you live there, you will do it the Egyptian way. And if you are in the minority, you could end up in slavery. Bad things can happen to you. Or you just got to make it through. And one of the things I want to say to you today is that little place out of Egypt I called my son, I want to say it a little bit differently. Out of Egypt, God calls all his sons and daughters. Egypt, we live in Egypt. Did you know that? So we don't call it Egypt. We call it America. And even when Jesus was born, Egypt still represented a more advanced people. But actually, Egypt wasn't even Egypt anymore. It was Rome. It was Rome. Today's Rome, today's Egypt is America. You and I live in one of the most privileged places in America. It's a nice thing to live in a superpower where there are two gigantic oceans over here. It's very hard to get invaded. Which is why my dad decided, I'm in my 30s, but I guess let's do it. He was the last one on my mom's side of the family to make that decision. Out of Egypt, I call my son. And what I want to say to you today is we live in Egypt, but we were never intended to be of Egypt. Did you know? Yes, you can have American citizenship, and I hope you'll be a good American, but that cannot be where you're really, really about. And you know what? Regardless of what ethnicity you are, if you belong to Jesus, you belong to a very different world. And regardless of what ethnicity you are, you'll be displaced. You'll have danger of losing your job, of being hated, of being rejected. And one of the things I want to say to you is that the Father knows. He sees you. And he loves you. And he'll make a way for you. Can you not just look into the world and say, I got to play the Egypt game? Not just, yeah, let's just talk about one that's super relevant to here. You all work here. If you live here, you work here. Some of you are looking for a job here. The Egyptian way, the Roman way, the American way, the Silicon Valley way, is we have our values. And you better mouth our values. If not, we'll get rid of you. The Roman way was like this. We're going to celebrate our culture. You show up with this thing called an oblation. It's called a wine offering. You go before an image of the emperor. And you pour that wine offering to the emperor. And you kind of do this little bow. And the emperor is God in our land. We don't care what ethnicity you are. We don't care what religion you are. As long as you do this, you're a Roman. And we'll honor you. And the Christian said, I can't do that. Not going to do that. Because the emperor's not my God. And yes, I want to be a good Roman. And I will be a good Roman, but I'm not going to do that. Because we are called out of Rome, just as we are called out of Egypt. And I know that's not an easy thing to hear. But today I want to ask you, which gift would you want in this world? The gifts of Rome? The gifts of Silicon Valley, you know? These? Or will you trust that your Father give you eternal life? Here, tomorrow, and forever. And it doesn't matter if you live in Egypt. He will make a way for you. He sees you. Egypt around here doesn't see you. Silicon Valley doesn't see you. Whoever your boss is, you're like, yeah, he's not going to like me. I'm not the right ethnicity. I don't have the right degrees or whatever. But your Father sees you. Christmas says that the Father sees his very, very own son. His very, very own son is out of Egypt. Called out of Egypt and displaced, even amongst his own people. Let me tell you a personal story and then we'll close. I'm really personal today. just want to help you to relate. I only heard this story like 2 years ago. So what is it with these grandparents that don't tell you important stories so you're like an old man, you know, until you're middle-aged or something like this, okay? My mom, I don't know, she started talking about, we immigrated to the U.S. in 76. We lived in Richmond. My parents saved. My uncle said, I don't want you to have a physical labor job. We want you to get a white-collar job. So my uncle paid for them to go to adult school in Berkeley, learn some very rudimentary English so they can get a white-collar job. And my mom got her job first. It was at Bank of America in San Francisco. She had to take the BART from Richmond to San Francisco. Actually, it was the El Cerrito station. Sometimes whenever I drive by El Cerrito, I'm like, here's my mom, can't speak a lick of English, getting on this BART to go to work in San Francisco. She's a real lowest level paper pusher, some kind of clerk. And my dad didn't land a job at first too. I think my mom started asking around and somehow there was a connection and my dad got a job at World Savings in Oakland. Also through my mom. They saved, and they wanted to buy a house. You know, they saved enough money and they had a choice. So in 1979, we moved. Okay? We moved to Hayward. My dad told me this. We could have moved to Hayward and they could have bought a townhouse. That's what they could afford. Or that we could have moved to San Jose and bought a house. That was not a good decision, was it? They chose Hayward. I was like, I heard that's a dad. Your house would have been, you could have bought that house for like $20,000 and today it'd be worth like $1.5 million. Good decision, Dad. And he laughs. Here's the part I want to tell you. My mom could barely speak English. She had no idea how they could afford to buy this house. They knew they had saved money, but they had to get this thing called a mortgage. She works for a bank. She had no idea how it works. She asked her manager, can I get a mortgage? Can I qualify? And she thought the answer would clearly be no. He was a middle-aged white guy. And this is what he said. He said, of course you can get a mortgage. You're one of us. You work for Bank of America. You will most certainly qualify. And so he gave her this paperwork she signed. She probably couldn't even understand what the heck she was signing, thankfully. And she got this mortgage. I don't know if it was such a great prize. The interest rate was like 20%. It was not a good time. The Lord sees you. When my mom told me that story, I remember thinking like, there's no way that could possibly happen today. The Lord saw my mom, saw our family. And she had this great middle class, this little middle manager, white middle-aged man, and he saw her. And the Lord made a way. That's the same Father who put his son into Egypt. That son represents you and I get to be the sons and daughters of God because he came to suffer all the ways he'd be rejected and all the ways that he would receive sin in this world so that he could take that away. And we could be assured that his Father is our Father. Okay, let's go to part three. Let's go to this verse. This is chapter 1, verse 23. And you should know it by now. It is a beautiful, beautiful verse. The virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel. Don't get hung up on the spelling. I don't know why. Sometimes they spell it I. Sometimes they spell it E. I like E, okay? And it says, God with us. That's what it means. The Messiah is the Son of God, vulnerable, poor, rejected, and displaced. Always could lose his place. The Son represents that God is not some distant God who would only be above you and far away. God himself became persecuted, rejected, and a displaced little kid. Christmas shows us that he came to show that we are never alone in this world, even though it can be quite cruel, racist, unjust, and unloving. And Christmas is ultimate justice. So much about justice today is about exclusion. You know what Christmas is? It's the ultimate inclusion. The Son of God became excluded so that all of us who feel excluded can be included by the most important person there ever is or ever will be. And he went through that so that his sonship can come to us. And we could never lose that. Do you want whatever Egypt can offer you? America, Silicon Valley, your company? Would you rather have everlasting inclusion through sonship? I hope you'd rather have that. That's what Christmas offers. Jesus himself is the ultimate justice and mercy and grace. Grace isn't something on the outside. It's Jesus himself. Justice isn't just some weird abstract idea. That's how godless people think about it. Justice is Jesus. Inclusion is Jesus. And he is the gift of the Father. Your inclusion, your justice is the inclusion gifted to you by the Father. He was sent so that the Father would make a way for us in this world where we regularly feel like, I'm anxious. I don't know. How am I going to get through this? How am I going to get through this? But in the Egypt of our time, Jesus represents that the Father says, I see you. I've got a way. I'll protect you. I'll provide for you. I've got a mortgage for you. I've got a job for you. I've got friends for you. I've got a wife for you. I got ways for you. I have a plan for you. Jesus did not simply pay for all the sins on the cross. He also received and absorbed all the ways that we are sinned against with rejection, exclusion, and displacement. Every way in which you are not seen, the way you are overlooked, the way you're ignored, and in fact, you are seen so you can be insulted, his cross is to say that, wash that away. I came to absorb all that. And when you come and you are united to me, you'll be into a humanity that can conquer all that. Every rejection, every exclusion, I've already tasted all of it. I have conquered all of it. I have absorbed all of it and made a way so we can have that way. So Christmas, I want you to see it. The Father has made a way for his children Israel, and he just kept doing it again and again and again. He did it for Abraham, for Jacob, for Joseph, for Moses, for this Joseph, for his very, very only begotten son, Jesus. And if he would do that for all of them, and then Jesus, his son Jesus, made the ultimate way through the cross. If God will not let sin, guilt, death, injustice, ours, or even the devil, or sin, guilt, injustice and exclusion, somebody else doing it to you, exclude you from all the inclusion of the sonship of Jesus, will the Father not see you through Egypt today? Whatever you're nervous about, whatever makes you feel unloved or unseen and nervous and anxious, or maybe even lonely or bitter or cynical or angry, could you put that at the feet of the baby rejected one and let him, through his cross, absorb all of that and come to believe the gospel? You are always included and seen and loved through Jesus. Can you believe that? Merry Christmas, Revive. Let's pray.